We ready? Are we recording? I'd like to welcome everyone to the City of North Salt Lake Council Meeting, the work session. And our first item is an update from Horrocks Engineering on the railroad grade separation. And I just want to say I get asked regularly if I'm part of the Horrocks Engineering Group, and I'm open to receiving dividend checks or whatever.
We'll make sure that gets in the minutes, Mayor,
yeah.
For you.
Anyway, turn it over to whoever is going to address us here.
Well,
or Ken.
I'll start for just a moment. No, come on up, Corey. We, as the council knows, but maybe for the benefit of the public that's here, the city has been working for a number of years on a grade separation project to separate the rail corridor, separate the road 1100 North or 2600 South, as most people know it, from the railroad tracks. And folks will remember that there's a famous video out on YouTube of a train smashing into a FedEx truck. This is the location that we're talking about. And the city has really been concerned about public safety first and train delays a close second, which occur both on Center Street and on 1100 North in our city. And so we were able to obtain some funds from the legislature to do this project, which you'll get an update on tonight, which is our design project for the grade separation. And this has been a great experience for us. Horrocks has done a great job assembling a team. They're very competent, capable folks, and the team members that they have, you'll meet tonight too, have been very good at getting us to this point. It's not all good news, and I'll let Corey kind of roll that out. The council's been updated a little bit on what we know about this project, but Corey, this is Corey Pope. He's the project manager with Horrocks Engineers, and I'll let you introduce others, Corey. One last thing I'd say is we have Craig Peterson and Ryan Peterson. You can raise your hands, guys. Those are the city's formal lobbyists for the city that help us on this and other projects that we're working on. So, Corey, we'll turn it over to you. Thanks. Oh, yes, just push the button there. Thanks.
We can do that. Do you want me to start over? Good evening. It's a pleasure to be here tonight. Ken mentioned, we have been working on a solution for that at-grade crossing for the last almost a year now, looking at building from a previous study that was done. Okay, now if I can get this to work correctly. It's nice, just like a charm. As you may recall, there was a feasibility study done in this area back in 2015. And that study, or 2018, sorry, that study came up with what was referred to as a preferred alternative, and it was a bridge, a grade separation over the main line of Union Pacific and UTA. Subsequently, as was mentioned, the legislature appropriated some funding to look at a design for that scenario, and that's where Horrocks Engineers has come in. As Ken mentioned, I'm Corey Pope. I'm the project manager. With me today, I have Kathy Wickham, who's our design manager, and Darren Ayer. I always say his name wrong. Darren Ayer, who's our railroad coordinator. Darren has helped us out with the communications and coordination with UP, and has been a great team member on a lot of projects with us, so we really appreciate him taking time to be here today. Just real quick as an overview and kind of an update on where we are with the project. So our initial the contract was to look at a preferred alternative from the feasibility study. That has included a state environmental study. And the reason for doing the environmental study is to make sure that we keep the options open for funding in the future. We want to make sure that we've crossed those T's and dotted the I's environmentally so that whether it be through UDOT or some other entity, that the funding would be eligible for this project for construction. So on that piece, we've completed all the field work and all of the data collection. We haven't taken it much further just because we wanted to kind of test the waters with the railroad and really get a good sense of what was going to be required there before we spent more money on it. We have done some preliminary engineering, so we've developed some alignments and some real basic cross sections to define what the bridge would look like, what the roadway is going to look like. Part of that was a traffic study that was done that really is telling us some good news, I hope, in that the roadway cross section is really functions quite well into 2050 with a three-lane section, so two travel lanes and then a turn lane median. Initially, we thought there would be a five-lane section requirement, so two lanes each direction. So I think, you know, in a sense, that's good news. Now, with one exception, right on the far east end where we connect in right about Overland Drive, from Overland Drive to the freeway, because of all the operational activity going on there with the interchange, it does require a five-lane section through that area, and then it would taper off into a three-lane section just past Overland Drive. So that helps a lot with, obviously, costs. The bridge gets narrower, so it becomes a little more feasible cost-wise. So that was some good news. We have also developed a concept submittal for Union Pacific Railroad. Union Pacific, when you encroach on their property, they have a process that we're required to go through. Starts out with a concept submittal, pretty high level, and then they kind of give you the yays and nays of what could be acceptable. So we've submitted that. The next step is once they approve that, the next step is to submit a more engineered version. So it's a 60% plan set, or no, 30% plan set, sorry. So you've got a little more engineering done on it. And then finally, 100% plan set for their approval. We've also had a lot of coordination with Region 1, the UDOT Region 1, and UDOT headquarters, the I-15 team, making sure that we're, you know, what we construct here or what we design here is going to be compatible with what they're doing out there at the interchange and the new I-15 reconstruction. And then I mentioned that we have been coordinating with UP, and the last step was we made the concept submittal to UP, and it's been about 6 or 7 weeks ago since that happened. So as you recall, and just kind of a refresher, this was the preferred alternative that came out of the feasibility study. For those of you in the back, it was the grade separation of the main line up here with the bridge, and the bridge would basically start down in this area, ramp up, over, and then come back down. The alternative also had a shifting Main Street, the Main Street intersection to the west. Because of the slope coming down off of the bridge, you can't create a flat landing for that intersection. So, you know, we had to push it to the west so that we could bring that profile down low enough and flat enough so that made a good intersection with good sight distances and things like that. We also looked real high level, and again, this has got a big concept-only stamp on it. I don't want to frighten all the neighbors or anything like that, but we looked at the ability to make connections to provide the access that is out there today. And so there's obviously some challenges in there, but I think we've talked about this a little bit before of, you know, one option here, and there's a lot of refinement that still needs to happen there. So I will get to the meat of this presentation. We received our response back from Union Pacific Railroad, and it was not what we were hoping for. They essentially said they could not approve this alternative. Their reasoning really centered on the Woods Cross industrial lead. And it's hard for me to get my mind around that, but the reasoning for that was anytime they widen a track, they increase their exposure. And so we were widening the track at that point to provide sidewalks and full lanes and shoulders. Union Pacific said that just wouldn't be acceptable. They also talked about the realignment of Main Street and pushing that intersection closer, which, again, the closer that intersection, the more likely you get cars stacking and potentially into the railroad right away if a train were coming, or across the tracks if a train were coming. We talked to them about synchronizing the intersection signals and the track crossing arms, but that it doesn't meet standard. We knew that going in, but that wouldn't fly with UP. So we have been denied by UP the opportunity to develop the preferred alternative any further. Two of the options that were discussed with our initial discussions with UP, they made note of this as well, is a potential viaduct that would span both of those lines. We did some real high-level preliminary looks at that and cost analysis. It's close to double the cost to be able to build a bridge that long. But it is feasible, and it does, I think we talked about this last time I was here, it does solve some of the problems with settlement of the soils in the area and some of the utilities that would have been impacted. But it also is, you know, a very expensive bridge. And I also know there's some sensitivities to, you know, what type of bridge and you know, just the context of the community and what that might mean. So the other option would be to come back in, similar to the alternative that we looked at, go ahead and stop short of the rail line. And now that we know that the travel lanes are a three-lane configuration, we wouldn't have to widen that if we bring it down and stop short. The challenge with that now is with this intersection of Main Street. And because of the profile coming off of that bridge, we likely wouldn't be able to provide a connection to Main Street and 1100 North. So obviously some sensitivities there. I talked to our environmental folks, just asked them, you know, how does that change where we're at today if we did not provide a connection to Main Street? They felt like it was a little up in the air. They said if there is a traffic, if you're not serving the traffic as well as it was before, then from a DOT standpoint, they would likely push it into a higher level environmental document. At a city level, it's not necessarily required, but it also, I would suspect there could be some sensitivities from adjacent communities on the loss of that access too. So I think probably the risk or concern there would be a more substantial environmental study that would be required.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, sir.
Is the second track, this one right here, if we were to span that, we wouldn't need to divert Main Street, would we?
So spanning that also poses some problems, and I won't say you can't do it, but in order to bring it up, it would be, and I apologize, you can't see what I'm pointing to, but from where the bridge is, you would essentially have a fairly flat platform all the way from the mainline tracks across to the Woods Cross Industrial Lead. So you could bring Main Street up and tie that in. but it would require a lot of retaining wall, a lot of expenses, and probably some significant impacts to all four legs of that intersection. More right-of-way impacts than the preferred alternative would have been. But yes, there is an option to do that. The other option would be to build the bridge and not make the connection to Main Street. And again, I know for North Salt Lake, that may not be a fatal flaw. I don't know how the neighbors to the north at Woods Cross would feel. And I think that might be where the more sensitive piece comes into.
Okay.
As we were putting this presentation together, there was another point that had brought up by Union Pacific, and I'm not sure that them bringing up this point was something that needed to come into play, but they brought up Center Street and said that was their most critical crossing. Why aren't we looking at that? So we put together, and I hope you can see this better than I can on your screens, but we put together this slide here that just shows the proximity of that first railroad line to I-15, to the structure there. And there's about 300 feet there, just a little over 300 feet, and you've got to raise up the roadway or the profile to get the bridge up to cross those tracks. You have to raise that about 32, 33 feet. So you've got a really a steep slope going up that. Doesn't meet any standards. I don't know. It'd be about a 10% slope. I don't know, given weather conditions in Utah that we may or may not have, if that would even be traversable sometimes in the wintertime. So it would be a challenge there. So without substantial changes in I-15, either raising that section up, I don't know that this, that to me seems like a pretty fatal flaw there. That next segment in the middle just kind of shows the span there, and I believe, I can't read the writing, I believe it's
620.
Yeah, about 620 feet. So that's roughly the length of the bridge, which is quite a bit longer than the one that we would, our preferred alternative on 1100 North. And then on the left side of the slide, I've put in there about 450, 460 feet. That would be the profile. So that would be the length that you would need to get a standard profile in there. So aside from the area closest to I-15, you also have a lot of access issues that it would be very difficult. Well, you would have major impacts to the properties, and possibly you wouldn't be able to provide access, especially that area between the tracks. And obviously with the oil companies, that would be a real challenge, if not nearly impossible, without doing some substantial relocation of some of those facilities. So we wanted to point that out, and just in case there was any questions there, and we'd certainly answer other questions, but just wanted to make note of that and let you know why that's such a challenge and why it hasn't been explored in the past. So next steps, I guess the come to the meat of the discussion here is determination whether a viaduct option is, even acceptable to North Salt Lake City, the community, if that's an option that the city could live with. That certainly is it's expensive, but it's feasible.
Clarify again, when you say the viaduct option, you mean what again?
So spanning both the UP main line and UTA, as well as that Woods Cross industrial lead. So you would have a bridge that would come up to the, coming from the east, it would come up to the main lines, basically flat across, and then once you reach the industrial lead, you would dive back down. So it'd just be a longer bridge, essentially.
But I think it's important to understand, and maybe you could correct me, Corey, if I say this wrong, that the viaduct could be constructed in a different way than the preferred alternative by having columns under the bridge, rather than what we have now planned is just one sort of large single bridge where we might have settlement of soils and things because it's a larger structure. It's more like the bridge over Legacy Highway at Center Street, where it's just one structure. And then the viaduct option could be done with pillars or I don't know what you'd call it.
Yeah, and we haven't looked at it real close.
Yeah. But
you could have a single column with an overhang bridge,
yeah,
potentially. Typically, I think the most feasible is to have columns on the outside, so you mm-hmm. kind of have that with the bridge on top.
Yeah. So the length of the viaduct would be roughly what? And then the cost becomes ballpark roughly what? Or how many, you know, what's the multiplier on the cost perhaps?
So when we were looking at, it was about double. It's just rule of thumb going from that single bridge, single span bridge with two abutments, no columns in the middle, to a longer bridge with columns along the way to allow, to carry the bridge. The cost was about double. One of the things we haven't done since the analysis on the traffic is we haven't gone back and really looked at those costs now, updated those costs yet. Those will go down, obviously, insubstantially. You're looking at, you know, two out of five lanes that go away from that bridge. But that would happen in either scenario. So I think we're safe to say that we're probably in that double figure. And it could be a little bit less, but.
And our cost estimates right now, and these are, as you point out, they're a couple of years old at least.
They are.
So we were in the $45 to $60 million range bridge.
I think we're, right around that 50.
And 50, maybe 50 million.
I think the numbers that we ran initially and super high level was about, it was in the 90s. So it went from about 50 million to 90 something for the viaduct option or the longer bridge option. One of the things that there's a couple benefits to doing that type of a bridge in that, and I mentioned settlement. So your bridge is actually built on these deep foundations that are down 100, 150 feet in the ground sometimes. So you don't get settlement from that, or at least very little settlement from that. So because your foundations are on solid material, you don't have to worry about that as if you were to put an embankment on. So settlement is obviously a big deal there, and it also impacts all the utilities in the corridor, which there are a lot. So it helps us with that. It also would help us to maintain access. Now, in between the tracks, I don't think we could, you know, we probably wouldn't be able to fight that access, but on either side, you would be able to use the existing road, or at least that area, for access to all the businesses. So that's another benefit from going there. So it's it solves some problems for sure, but it obviously poses another problem in some additional costs. So I guess, you know, looking at next steps again, I guess right now we really kind of need to determine what would be acceptable to the city. If there's an alternative that you would like to move forward with that meets all of the requirements for Union Pacific, we would need to do some additional concept development on that and some feasibility you'd have to take a step back, I guess is what I'm saying, on the design. And then also the concern that I mentioned about the environmental, if Main Street were not connected to 1100 North, does that kind of heighten the need for a little more substantial environmental study? And I guess in my mind, that maybe is more of conversations between Woods Cross and North Salt Lake City to see if that could somehow be acceptable. Are there any questions? And if you have questions, I'm probably going to defer to my friends in the back because they're much smarter than me. But
not an engineer. but that doesn't keep me from asking dumb engineer-like questions. Is there is an option that you looked at one of having the original bridge come over the top of Main, and then there's access to Main underneath the bridge?
Yeah. So Main Street would still exist. It just wouldn't have that connection to 1100 North.
But that's the viaduct option. Is there a non-viaduct option that, you know, perhaps instead of tying into a new Main Street intersection, you're just going over Main Street, but you don't have the expanse of getting all the way over the second track? Or does that not give you any benefit to do
that? So I mentioned one of the options would be to stay with the single bridge, bring it down before, and don't touch the industrial lead. In order to do that, Main Street would still have to be pushed to the east now, instead of the west, the east, to be able to get clearance. Because you're coming down really, really sharp. Okay. Well, we would anyway, but coming down pretty steep to tie in before you get to that next track. And we just wouldn't have the clearance there to keep Main Street in its current alignment.
And the other thing, I guess, is that we're not sure if I've got this hand on or arrow on this map on your screen, but if you shift Main Street over to here on the east side, we also have a spur line that's here.
Yep.
So we may run into trouble there. I do think the viaduct could be, some of these options may cut off north-south access on Main Street. I think the viaduct option, there is a chance we could continue Main Street under the viaduct.
Yes.
Without providing vehicular access to 2600 South, but people would still be able to travel north and south.
Correct.
On Main Street. So it's not a complete...
Correct.
It's not completely cutting off the public, but it is removing access to 1100 North or 2600 South.
Direct access.
And so when we think about that, for our city, that's not the worst option in the world because our residents and others have the chance to come to use Overland Drive, which is right here, to get to 2600 South or 11th North. And so there is a connection here. It's way out of travel, and so we know that the public won't. They don't often go very far out of their travel pattern to make those connections. In Woods Cross, and I talked briefly to Woods Cross about this. They have a similar access issue. They're building a connection to Main Street up here, but that's also pretty far out of travel for folks to use this roadway system to get to 1100 North. And I don't know that whether this access here on 2600 South is impacted by the viaduct. It very well may be.
I don't know for
but
sure where that
we don't know. So, because you know, as I scale the in and out, the distances change dramatically. But Woods Cross has, of course, objected in my conversations with them to losing access to 2600 South, and I think that's the normal reaction. I think if the shoe were on the other foot, we would say no, we have to have our access to 2600 South. But if we were to enter into kind of a more serious discussion with Woods Cross, given this denial by Union Pacific, I do think that really changes the whole complexion of the project and how we move forward. So I wish there were better alternatives. We haven't even talked about land use impacts of a viaduct, which I think are significant. If you think about viaduct locations that you might be familiar with in Salt Lake City or in Ogden or in other parts of the country, Generally speaking, the land around and underneath the viaduct, it becomes problematic in certain ways. They could become areas for homeless people, and my comment's not an anti-homeless comment. I always say that, but it could be an attractive nuisance, and will fundamentally change the character of what's underneath it. And so, these businesses could be harmed by a degradation of the land use pattern in the area by a lack of access. You just don't know what the impacts might be.
Ken?
It'll still be a great place for storage units, which are there in your picture. So those seem to survive everywhere they are placed.
All right. I had a discussion last Saturday with Congressman Stewart. Told him this was not going very well. He asked what he could do to help. And I said, if you could go back to 1820 and change the railroad laws in the country, it might be a good start.
That's true.
He was willing, he wanted to help. And I guess if we're getting to $100 million, is it time to look at tunneling? Is that?
I think that would be
more than $100
exponentially
million?
More, yes.
Okay.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. I hate to say we're dead in the water, but I feel like we're dead in the water.
It does feel that way in a certain way, and I think I feel kind of obligated to discuss for a brief moment some of the thinking that went into the preferred alternative. Just so you know, I think all the professionals in the room and the staff that's been working on this, we all felt that crossing the grade separating the main railroad corridor would appear to Union Pacific to be important enough to approve the project without insisting that the Woods Cross Industrial Lead also be crossed, since the Industrial Lead has far fewer trains, 2 to 3 per week, as opposed to several trains a day on the main line. I think that we may have miscalculated. I don't think that's an error on anyone's part. I think it was a good gamble, and I shouldn't use the word gamble because we've spent a significant amount of public funds on this. It's not a gamble. It was a reasoned, well thought out approach, and it does feel like we've been stopped.
So
in that approach,
for those that have experience working with railroads, is there a chance that this is like a negotiating ploy on their part? Hey, let's see if by denying their request we can get them to do the double or the whole viaduct, and then
good question.
You know, if we just come back and say that's an absolute ridiculous joke and we hate your guts, and then we just let, you know, 6 months or a year go by, that they then maybe they're ready for another try.
A redo.
And to dovetail on that, it seems like the weakness in our position is that they continually violate their agreement about blocking, and they don't care, and there's no consequence. And so if we were fining them heavily every time they blocked an intersection for more than 20 minutes or whatever, they would be like, oh, wow, we've got to do something about this. But right, there is no consequences to them, and that's why it seems like our position is pretty weak. But change our mind.
So I think it's a great question, though, that we would ask Darren about.
Thank you. I've been working with the railroad for about 20 years, so I have a little bit of experience with them. To answer the first question, is this a negotiating tactic by the railroad? We don't know, but based on my experience working with the railroad on similar projects, I don't think it is on this project. The reason I say that is if you look at the accident data that the Federal Railroad Administration publishes, there's a lot more accidents that are happening at Center Street than at 1100 North. And that's one because we asked them these same questions, right? We didn't just take their initial no at face value. There is an option to go back to them and say the project cannot be funded, take it or leave it. We've verbally talked to them that there's a very high risk of that. And they reviewed it internally. They reviewed it in Omaha. They came back to us with the same position and said, right now we can operate as is. We just don't want to take that extra risk of exposure by creating a situation on the Woods Cross Industrial Lead that doesn't exist today. As Ken mentioned earlier, we thought that it would go through. Right now on the main line, the Federal Railroad Administration has published that there are up to 25 trains per day on the main line that travel 40 miles per hour. As opposed to the Woods Cross Industrial Lead, there's up to 7 trains per day that travel only 5 to 10 miles per hour. And so we thought, you know, they're going to get rid of this high speed, high volume situation and create a little bit of exposure. But as you weigh the two, we thought the one would significantly outweigh the other, but they don't feel that way. Does that answer your question? Doesn't make you happy, but just want to make sure it answered your question. And then as far as the other comment, I don't know that I have a response to that one. There is some frustration throughout the state with the same things that you had mentioned as well.
Can I ask a quick question? If we're talking about a crossing at Center Street and how it wouldn't work because of I-15, is there a way we could fix that with the new I-15 reconstruction project, where we could have them do something that would mitigate that angle?
So the answer is yes, it's possible, but it would be very, very expensive to raise I-15 enough. And then you still have the access issues that would be really difficult to solve, if not impossible to solve, just because it's so narrow and those driveways that go into the refineries and the storage would be I don't know that you could reestablish those. I kind of feel like
okay, so 2,600 is the best.
In my mind, yes.
Maybe I can jump in here and just ask a question, make a statement at the same time. It's probably been 20 years and maybe even longer, but they did have at one time, this was back when before Legacy was completed, they had an on-ramp at the south part of Highway 89 that took the traffic off of Highway 89 and put it onto I-215, and then also took it off of I-15 and put it on 215. It was a pretty expensive deal back then, but I'm thinking it was like $28 million back then, which, you know, I'm sure it could be $100 million now, but, you know, so it makes a little bit of a thing there. But that would solve some of the, you know, the Center Street issues, because once you get on I-215 going west, then you could get off on Redwood Road, and you'd essentially have a way to get from the east to the west. And I remember seeing the drawings. So they had it to the point, they had it into a conceptual form at that point. And then I thought they were going to do it. So I thought that was our solution back then. And then all of a sudden I didn't see any more on it and kind of went away. So I don't know if you've ever seen anything on that or UDOT's ever brought that up again. But they, like I say, there was drawings that you could look at, and they had it designed to that point.
I haven't seen those, Councilman. As you all are most likely aware, UDOT's currently doing an EIS for the reconstruction of I-15. They have a lot to balance in there. The interchange at 215, the interchanges at, well, the partial interchange at Center Street, 2600, 1100 North. I know they're in the process of developing alternatives right now.
Okay.
And looking at what is feasible, and they'll be going, if they haven't started already, they'll be going through a screening process, public screening process. And I believe at that point, that's probably the best time to be able to
put that
champion
in.
Something like that, if that's in the cards.
Yeah, well, if I could find the drawings that I had at one time, that'd be great. But go a little farther south. Ken, are you running this?
I was just going to comment that one of our comments during the public comment period on the current I-15 project is better access to I-15 right here at Center Street.
Yeah, so. This would have been right here where 215 comes off. They had a interchange from Highway 89 to 215, an overpass there. Overpass coming this direction that would allow traffic from I-215 to meet up with the highway. And then they also had some interchanges to bring the I-15 to 215. So, and it was, you know, a little spaghetti bowl there. But in a lot of ways, I think that might solve our Center Street issue that was getting pretty major now. Because the traffic wanting to go west could just simply come down here on the highway. They could go west. They could get off at Redwood Road. And they'd be on the west side. But anyway, that's just something that I know years ago I saw, and we kind of thought that was a good idea, but it never happened.
I know.
And it was expensive. It seemed expensive back then, but of course now it's going to be a lot more money.
I have a question, a couple questions, and probably for Craig too, Craig Peterson and Ryan. Three of them. First, if I want somebody to tell me, what does the railroad have to gain by facilitating this project? Okay. Secondly, why wouldn't we explore, or should we explore, the underground version on Center Street? And if the railroad says, oh, we like the Center Street, that's the problem, we have the most accidents, that seems the most likely place, how much more would it cost to go underground? So that underground piece. And then third, I think for Craig and Ryan, is were we surprised by this when this happened? Those are my three questions.
Okay. So the mayor brought up underground or a tunneling, basically going underneath the railroad. A tunnel itself would be substantially more money, and exponentially more money. If we were to be able to dive down under, there would still be a lot of impacts. I couldn't give you an estimate on a cost right now without looking. I apologize for that, but I think when it was looked at initially, we did look at an underground with that feasibility study at 1100 North. And it was discounted mainly because of cost and then groundwater. Mm. I think that was probably the biggest challenge, was having so much groundwater so close to the surface.
Yeah.
You would end up with pumps running, you know, continually forever, and maintenance. I know from my experience with UDOT, they don't like to do that because it ends up in a long-term maintenance nightmare for them typically. Roads get flooded, they get closed. They have that same situation on State Street where they go underneath a railroad at about 7800 South there. It's the front, or it's a front runner tracks. Tracks, I think, down at that point. And every once in a while when there's a heavy rain, you'll hear about that. The pumps don't work and it gets flooded and they have to close State Street. And I think that's maybe the biggest challenge, is to trying to get rid of all the groundwater if you go underground like that. And, you know, obviously utilities are everywhere, very expensive to move, but that's going to be part of the utilities are going to be part of it anyway. But yeah, I know it was discounted. What I remember is it was mainly because of the groundwater at that location. So,
sorry, one other thing from a railroad perspective. When there's an existing track in service, that those need to maintain their serviceability. With UP would have two tracks, the industrial lead and the main, and UTA would have the main. So you have to build what's called a shoe fly. You basically build two sacrificial sets of tracks away from where the tunnel would be, build the tunnel, abandon those tracks you just built, and then rebuild the ones that were already in. So it's usually like a 4x cost to do that, and you don't have anything to show for it. It's just a bunch of sacrificial track that you build.
So, and then to answer your one question there, I had a discussion with the Union Pacific guy at the League of Cities and Towns, and he said that their number one priority is always the elimination of a crossing. And so he said, we're really excited about this. In fact, we'll even throw in 5% of the costs. I thought, okay, for being excited, you have to go at least 20%, I would think. So they would love to see this go away, but not to the point of doing much about it, apparently.
So what they could gain, what really would the railroad gain if they were to cooperate on this?
We eliminate a crossing.
Right off the bat is removal of that main line crossing.
That's it.
And that's important to them because they like to avoid those conflicts as much as they can. Their position in the discussions is that if we do something on main line and then we do something to make this one a little bit worse on the spur, that provides more exposure for the railroad from a liability standpoint. And I think that's just where they settled in, is that it increases exposure on that spur line to the point that they didn't feel like it was an offset. I struggle with that, and I think we all probably do. But you know, as a private business, UP is. I think your question is very valid. What did they stand to gain? Improve safety, but not as a private business. Yeah, it's not a lot.
Can I ask one other thought that we looked at before, but it seemed kind of far-fetched at the time, but maybe not now. And that would, rather than take it over 1100 North, is to develop it down over Overland and then cross where you're crossing all the tracks at one point and then going into the industrial part and then coming back to 1100 North. And if you'll scroll up, I'll show you what we're thinking about. So we'd have to beef up 1100 or Overland a little bit and come down and see where Overland goes. And it goes on the other side of Overland there. You have that retention basin, which at least the land would probably be cheap. And then you'd be, well, maybe even a little farther south. I was thinking someplace where those two tracks come a lot closer together. On that. It looks like they're still a ways apart there, but they're...
But can I broaden your point?
Sure.
I guess you're sort of thinking, hey, are there some innovative ideas we could explore within the broader vicinity that may have some benefit?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. We want to get people moving from east to west, and we want to get them off of Center Street, and we want to get them off 1100 North. Would it make sense to maybe look at an alternative of putting something in the middle there someplace where the two tracks are fairly close together, and we could put it over both tracks and we could kind of service the people trying to get north to south or east to west off of Center Street and off 1100 North. And of course they'd end up in the industrial park and down to Redwood Road is where we'd have to get them eventually. But that was another alternative that I was kind of looking at one time, was to try to get something happening where we could, it'd have to be before the freeway, obviously, but where the tracks are closer together and we'd look at some of the some of the impacts on the industrial side, and you can see that there are some kind of holes there. But that was another thought. Is there a place that we could maybe move this bridge so that we're getting the traffic over the tracks, but we'll have to move people either south of 1100 or north of Center Street so they're hitting that spot? Just a thought. You probably don't have an answer to that, but I'm just throwing that out as something that I've looked at this over the years and I've tried to figure out what the solution is, because Center Street's a mess because it backs up to the highway now in certain times, and people want an alternative. And of course, if they head north on Main Street, sometimes they can find an alternative there, but depends how long the train is, and suddenly it really becomes a problem on that. But I thought if you could maybe throw something in the middle there and then just get a road to that point that was major enough to handle some traffic, because obviously Center Street, when there's no trains, it's fine, and same with 1100 North.
It seems like that would be the weakness of that, though, too, is nobody would use it unless the trains were stopped.
Well, but and at then, least it,
so it's kind of an expensive plan.
Well, and I agree with that, but you could maybe set up a system where you'd let people know, and the, you know, yeah, and they could, and there are also other ones that impact, you know, the residents along Main Street that would be concerned about traffic. So there's, I mean, it's not a perfect solution, but at least it's a thought, and especially if the cost goes down considerably, so that you could do it more reasonable. You know, might not have to be a really major like 1100 North, because it'd just be a two-lane thing just to handle the traffic when it has to.
How much money have we spent so far on the study? How much money have we as a city expended?
We have a $3 million allocation from the legislature, and I think we have spent close to $500,000.
I think just under $500,000 or right around that.
Yep.
And was Craig, were you responsible for getting us that legislative funding?
Yeah,
were you
we should hear
that?
From Craig.
Were you helpful, obviously helpful in getting that funding?
I may have been aware of it. Thank you, Councilwoman.
I can answer that Craig,
stripping
Craig
things
did
away.
Get us the allocation for the legislature.
But yes, we've been working with the city for some time, and if you want the interesting sidelight of where the $3 million came from, when Union Pacific had their diesel credit removed by the legislature, $3 million of that went back into the state's coffers is what we now have to try and find a solution of crossing over their dang tracks. So there is some interesting nexuses that have occurred over the last few years in trying to put together this plan. To answer kind of your earlier question about, it seemed, to quote Ken, it seemed reasonable that we could solve a significant problem facing UTA, the railroad, and the community. And it was one of the things, as you well know in politics, sometimes we refer to the entity that holds out for the whole loaf and sometimes refuses to take it gets nothing. And it just seems so unreasonable to say you're willing to accept nothing as opposed to accepting significantly. In other words, in my family, we call the end of the breads the heel. And I don't know what you call it in your family, but that end piece, and say, we're going to give you the whole loaf except for the heel, that one piece that doesn't seem to fit in. And that's the frustration. Ken and I had a good conversation the other day about, is there a role, and this goes, Mayor, to your point, in your conversation with Representative Stewart, what can I do to help? There are times when we can have that kind of federal political pressure brought to bear that says, we think in our community that I represent, we have a reasonable solution. And you ramp that solution up from, with no disrespect to all of our good engineering friends, remembering I'm also one of them at one time, But if we look at it and say, how can we leverage politically, financially, and otherwise, the resources that we've already invested as a community, and as in this case, as a state, there's additional funding that we hope will be available from other sources to help bring this thing to true fruition. I would say there's an opportunity here for Congressman Stewart to sit down and say, "How we do have a problem here. We think we have a reasonable solution. Is it perfect? Corey and I have been friends for a long, long time, and we've worked on some projects and been on the opposite side of a few of those over the years. And what you do is you ultimately come together and you find a reasonable solution. Seldom is, you know, except for one of the last projects I worked on, there has never been a perfect solution. That last project I worked on, yes, it was absolutely, it was flawless. I hope you will bear my humor. But at the end of it, I think we, to simply throw our arms up and abandon what is, I think, to everyone in this room, to your constituents, a reasonable solution, if not, albeit perfect, we need to maybe have a little bit of help. And sometimes that little bit of help involves a little politics, a little help, maybe some of our friends we've had in years past. We had a very good D.C. lobbyist who was well known back there that has worked with the city. And sometimes we need a little help in getting those answers that in the context of what could ultimately be a $100 million project, let's just be blunt about it. But it solves an enormous project. But if we could solve that, if we get 90% of the problem solved for less than half the money, I struggle with trying to understand that. So it's a long answer to a very short question, Councilwoman, but we look at it as, does this surprise us a little bit? Absolutely. Because it made sense. It was reasoned. And I've done, as Corey knows, I've done a few projects over the railroad, and we kind of jokingly said, well, if the UP is involved, just simply add 18 months. Now, they don't add any value, but they will add 18 months to the project. And I'm being a little overly sensitive there, but the truth of the matter is, I think we do need to be, not to reset, but maybe strategically reset a little bit on how we address this. But I think they're in the right, I absolutely believe that the Corey, CRS, the Horrocks team, they're the best. And they know what they're doing, but sometimes we all need a little bit of help. And so the money's there. Let's see if we can put our minds together strategically and address some of these issues. And we look forward to continue to work, because this is a problem that simply we can't walk away from, I don't think. And you, as representing these communities and your constituents, can simply throw our arms up in the air and say, we just don't have a solution for it. Sorry. You're just going to have to, hopefully it's not your child or your parent that needs that emergency service vehicle, or Chief Black needs to get to the other side and says, well, it's going to take me 25 extra minutes, or I guess I could zip on down to Fifth South. Those aren't good answers. I think we have a good answer. I think we have a reasoned answer. And I would be more than happy to work with Chris, with Congressman Stewart, and I know he has some folks back there that he has a great deal of respect if we need to broaden that influence a little bit. So
the good news
those
there,
are my thoughts, and I apologize for the length of the response.
Congressman Moore, Congressman Stewart, Senator Lee have all been stuck behind a train on 1100 North. So they all understand perfectly well the problem.
This may not be the appropriate place to relate this, but some years ago we were trying to put together the necessary political power to get I-15 reconstructed south of Salt Lake County, and it was a problem. And I guess maybe this is probably in a public forum, not the best place to reveal this, but what we did is we set up an opportunity for Governor Leavitt to receive a substantial and prestigious award at Utah Valley University. We also scheduled it to be the same day as a game day for BYU. He was an hour late getting there to his own award. And suddenly his support for that project went 180 degrees. And you all now drive on the I-15 project. Corey doesn't know this story either. But you drive on the I-15 project, and part of it was the strategy that we put together to get people's attention. That's what Ryan and I are good at, is putting together the ideas, how can we make this forward? So I apologize again for the length of time. I know you've got other things to accomplish, but we look forward to continue to working with you.
Can I just ask one more question? As you've been talking, I was just thinking of another alternative. Is there a way that we can end that spur track right there and then have another connection to the main line going over to that spur so that would be able to, they'd be able to accomplish their same objective of getting to those other services that they use, and then they could use the main line to, you know, to cover that short distance? Have we looked at that alternative at all? I know. Again, we're dealing with the railroad, but
no. Great question. Right now, I don't know. We'd have to look into that. The beautiful thing about this is that there's a process that we can follow through the engineering process and environmental process and evaluate those options. So,
okay,
that could be. It may or may not work out. But
I mean, I don't know where that spur services to the north.
There's several other industries to the north that get serviced.
But again, there might be an easy path to bring a track from the main line over to that, and then, you know, they could just run it on the main line until they get to that point and move it over.
Yeah, that's something we can look into.
I would say that might be something we might look into. That might solve all our problems.
Have we given them enough direction, Ken?
The purpose of this item was really first information for the city council. To now you're up to speed completely. You know everything we know, and that was important to us. I think that we do have some direction from the council, and I appreciate your questions, all of your questions, and I appreciate Corey and Darren and Kathy for being here tonight and updating us, and Craig and Ryan for you folks. And this is of all the projects we've done in North Salt Lake, this one has it has the most intelligent people on it and the largest team. So I'm appreciative that they're all supporting us and helping us through this. So
yeah,
thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Question for the council: are you okay just continuing? May I have a short agenda, or do you need to break?
Oh, you mean, no, I don't need a break.
Okay. Well, let's go right into the city council then. Of course, I'm going to make Stan put his jacket on, I guess. Are you ready, Wendy, with the recording?